Wow, indeed. So, being alone with no one to turn to and no time to wait. That's the situation of hundreds of people outside this room who are experiencing homelessness, poverty, living with undiagnosed mental health conditions or addictions. So just imagine what you would do if your sister died and you had no funds to go to her funeral in Port Alberni. You didn't have enough cash flow to buy steel-toed boots after landing a job in construction. You needed to buy a $60 birth certificate to get a $35 BC health card to register for your disability benefits. Well, I could go on, but your share of the plate contribution will go directly, no overhead, to the Our Place Hope Fund to help those facing examples like this. They are true scenarios that our outreach workers have listed as they requested withdrawals from that fund. You may know that the Hope Fund brings care and dignity to people facing these daily pains of daily struggles to survive and thrive. Unitarians are special people at Our Place. Members of our congregation volunteer on the spiritual care team weekly. So DAR organizes a team from our congregation, and they include Fran, who just went back, I think, with the children, Mike Graham, who I think is coming this afternoon, Sylvia and Mariko. So, of course, Oceana, who is on staff part-time, and she's from our faith tradition. As director of philanthropy, which is because of Don Vipon's speech last year, actually, at Our Place now, I invite you to celebrate the season of giving with your gift of hope today. If you'd like to bring in blankets, socks, or warm clothes on the Sunday mornings coming up, I'd be happy to take them downtown or to one of our three shelters or the therapeutic recovery community that we now operate in View Royal. And we just opened an emergency shelter in Souk. If you have questions about anything about Our Place, I'd be happy to chat with you after the service. Now let's learn about Bridges for Women.
Good morning. Imagine you are a woman living and leaving an abusive situation. And you fellows can imagine, too, it'd be a challenge for you. You have found a temporary accommodation, but your life so far has been spent on raising kids and helping look after your aging father. And now you need to find a job. But what? You have no training and little confidence. That is where Bridges for Women steps in. What are your skills, your interests, your ambition? They offer counseling and moral support. They offer training and referrals where appropriate. They offer to help you with job searching and placement. They even help around babysitting and a kitchen where you can make yourself snacks. The Society for Bridges for Women has also won several awards, which I've listed in the newsletter. So far, for the last few years, we have made them one of our special Share the Plate December local charities. They deserve our help.
When you hear the phrase sea slug, what do you think? Slimy? I want to share with you a short story of being astounded and humbled. Yes, I'm talking about sea slugs and awe. Awesome sea slugs. Sort of. When I worked in Pacific Rim National Park Reserve years ago, I was assigned to photograph marine invertebrates. Shooting slide film, every frame counted. Before dawn, I went down to Lismore Island and looked in tide pools for hermit crabs, limpets peeking out from underneath their conical shells, barnacles waving their legs in the water to catch plankton, and yes, sea slugs. A Wiccanish sunrise. Infinite blue. Vast open ocean. Glowing silver, gold. Glassy. Murmuring waves draining back through sea palms and mats of blue mussels. But I wasn't photographing the spectacular seascape. I was photographing little sea slugs emerging from black-green tangles of eelgrass. I looked through the viewfinder for minutes and minutes, metering, composing, focusing, waiting for the sea slug to relax, to unfold those frilly little things on their heads and backs, waiting for them to forget me. So I could see them breathing, being themselves, waiting until the image in the viewfinder was perfect. Now, pushing the cable release and sitting back, feeling now myself immersed and tiny under this vast domed sky. Spruce and shore pine bristling on the headlands, the intertidal green, brown, and gray between saltwater and salal, and the curving silver sea. Looking again into the camera at this tiny, soft creature, translucent, orange, blue, so fragile and thin-skinned, I could see its inner organs. This little nudibranch lived there. It would still be there after I folded up my tripod and scuttled back up above the high tide line. It always lived there. Belonging, even when the rising tide and westerly gales would later crash roaring surf over these same little tide pools. Those sea slugs and the hermit crabs and barnacles and limpets so completely belong there. Fascinatingly vulnerable. It's not just the sea slug in the tide pool. It's the sea slug in the tide pool in a world so vast, so complex, abundant, and unaccountably beautiful. With my hands and feet in the brine and the sea air in my lungs, that moment will always be in my mind and in my soul.
There we go. Before I launch into this morning's message, I want to take this minute just to put a little capstone on our ABC campaign, which is wrapping up our pledge campaign, for those of you who are not familiar with it. We have now reached, as a congregation, $271,000, or approximately 77% of our goal. We still need to hear from about 70 households, and we need to do so as soon as possible, as the planning for 2020 is already underway and needs to be finalized soon. Reaching our goal makes all possibilities, benefits for staff, maintenance of this magnificent property and buildings, programs for people of all ages and stages doable. The good news is that 2019, actually, as we are reaching for our 2020 goal, 2019 is looking quite good. You may recall that we passed a budget as a congregation that anticipated an $8,600 deficit. But barring some unforeseen December collapse, we should end the year with a healthy surplus instead. I invite you, if you have not done so already and you're already here, to get a green form that's on the back table there, and there's a pledge box there, and please fill one in. We're rapidly trying as a board and finance committee to figure out what 2020 is going to look like, and we can't know that if we haven't heard from you. Here ends the public service announcement. This morning's reading, you know I'm into poetry these days, so this morning's reading is another poem. This poem is entitled, I Save My Love, and it's by Marjorie Sicer. I save my love for what is close, for the dog's eyes, the depths of brown when I take a wet cloth to them to remove the gunk. I save my love for the smell of coffee at the mill, the roasted near burn of it, especially the remnant that stays later in the fibers of my coat. I save my love for what stays. The white puff my breath makes when I stand at night on my doorstep. That mist doesn't last. Gone like your car turning the corner, you at the wheel waving. Your hand a quick tremble in a brief illumination, palm and fingers. Your face toward me. You had turned on the overhead light so I would see you for an instant, see you waving, see you gone. Alert for the awe-inspiring. When we picture something worthy of awe, we picture something grand and big, impressive or overwhelming. The poet reminds us that things that are close and small, almost to the point of mundane, can also be a source of awe. Being alive, bearing witness to existence, breathing. So much can inspire and evoke awe. Awe is defined most simply and succinctly as, and I quote, a feeling of reverential respect mixed with fear or wonder. A feeling of reverential respect mixed with fear or wonder. So how do we hold on to reverence? How do we navigate the fear that sometimes comes with it? How do we hold on to wonder? Something that often seems further and further away in modern life, which emphasizes its opposite, an almost cavalier sense of having little left to get excited about, nonetheless impressed by. This morning, I want to explore the nature of awe. What is it? What does it do to us and within us and for us to experience a sense of awe? And how can we stay alert to the moments of awe in our days when they arrive? What is awe? The moments that I can reflect upon and pinpoint a sense of awe having bubbled up are what I would call, this is just my Lynn Good version, enchantment encounters. Moments when in nature or in conversation or when at a museum or a live music concert, I have felt myself connected to some dimension of existence that I was a part of and also encompassed by simultaneously. Enchantment encounters. Moments when I felt embedded in and surrounded by life. Moments when I was keenly aware of the size and shape of my life, that it was small in relation to the cosmos, the scope of human history, and the more than 7 billion other human lives that I share the planet with in this moment in time. And yet at the same moment, almost the very same moment, it was clear to me in these enchantment encounters how much my one life could hold, how much loss and how much love, how much joy and how much sadness. Awe, it seems to me, has a way of casting everything about our existence in shadow and in light in such a way that makes it clear what life can be. Or perhaps what life always is, but often goes unnoticed. The art historian in me likes to think of awe as kind of casting something in relief. You know, those works of art that kind of come away from whatever they've been etched out of, and they kind of come toward you, and they have contour and shape. Awe is like that for me. It puts things in relief. Awe, of course, is also a close relative of wonder and amazement. Casey spoke of wow. I think of those wow moments. My eyes get bigger. My mouth gets a wow. It often has us feeling what is grand and minute, a sense of how all beings fit into the world, each with a place that is an element of an immensely beautiful and heartbreaking whole. Nature is one of the most reliable sources of this feeling. We saw it in the eagle's flight this morning. The grandeur of mountains and ocean, valleys and rivers can all leave us swept up in the miraculousness of it all. I have begun recently to take pictures with my cell phone on walks of flowers or plants. And the reason I have done so is because I just marvel at how intricate they are. Each blossom just every little fine detail. How it do that, like The Color Purple says. How could that be? And that I just walk right by it most of the time and don't go, wow. We can feel awe as well at our human connections and emotions, that we can love and grieve and build ties to other human beings and work so hard at building those connections, and yet somehow come to a place where we also have to lose them. This being alive, this being human, is complex and nuanced, textured and deep. I will never forget one of the first memorial services that I officiated at. Was one of the few that was actually a funeral. The casket was right there. This wonderful man that I used to greet on Sunday mornings, often talk with about sports, usually the Washington football team, that's name I will not repeat. And there he laid, Smitty, in this casket with his Washington football team memorabilia with him. And I stood next to his wife, Carolyn, and the people from the funeral home who were there said, "It's time," as we were getting ready to start the service, for her to close the door of the casket. And as I stood next to her, she reached up to close the door on the casket of her partner of 35 or 40 years, and she couldn't do it. She just broke down in tears. I remember I almost caught her because she nearly fell over. And I thought, what a thing for us to ask her to do. Why did they ask her to close the casket? What a thing we human beings do. We love and we lose and we try to hold it all. That's awe-inspiring. The resilience, the beauty, the elegance. So many moments in life are like that, worthy of awe. As we enter this holiday season now, this winter holiday season, which is full of so many reasons and stories and feelings that seem made to try to help us recapture a sense of awe, how will we find it this year? Today begins the Christian liturgical season of Advent, which reminds us that expectation and waiting, that preparing ourselves, literally trying to let every heart prepare room, can have deep meaning and power. Our Christian siblings are lighting a candle today of hope. Solstice will be here soon as well, and it reminds us that the cycles of the seasons can mirror our lives, and that each season brings questions and reflection. I once heard Quaker teacher Parker Palmer describe the spiritual question of winter in this way. I'm paraphrasing him, but he said essentially, "What is dormant within you that with some tending in these months of hibernation and rest may blossom when spring arrives?" Let that be your spiritual question this winter. What is dormant within you that with some tending in these months of hibernation and rest may blossom when spring arrives? And for those that are part of the Jewish tradition, Hanukkah will soon be here with its story of the miraculous lamp that burned far longer than it should have. Sometimes experiences in our lives defy logic. We find resources and reserves to rebuild and to start again that we didn't know we had. being a people of awe means not giving in to the jaded worldview that surrounds us these days. It means seeking ways to be re-enchanted with our world and our lives. There is so much that can evoke a sense of awe, bring a smile to our face, or a sense of amazement and disbelief at how remarkable life can be. Sometimes I find awe is inspired in me when I am in an urban setting, looking at the amazing array and diversity of the human family. Wow! Sometimes I find that appreciation of beauty and awe is brought about by that pure and stunning tone from an instrument. Sometimes it comes when I notice the amazing myriad forms of beauty in our natural world. Whatever the inspiration or source of your sense of awe, don't let it be taken away from you. Don't let it be taken away from you. You can't find it on Google. It's not on Facebook. It's right here. Don't be overtaken by ho-hum and seen it all. Because even if you have seen it before, my friends, life is full of causes for amazement. In the end, it is hard to describe awe. So I will finish by sharing just two moments of awe in my own life. I was fortunate enough at one point, I think it was relatively early in my relationship with Melora, that we decided we should go on an adventure together. And it was that way that we wound up in San Zachariah, a church in the middle of Venice. Who knows if that church, having been flooded recently, if you have to put on waders to even go in it. There's climate change for you. But in that church, we walked in, and my wife, being who she is, was buried in the guidebook reading about what it was we were supposed to see and appreciate in this particular church. And I walked in to this old, I mean, we don't know old in North America. Come on, right? We don't know old. Walked in, and there was a painting to my left that was in shadow. I couldn't see it that well, but I could tell there was something large there, some sort of altarpiece. And I noticed there was a little coin box that if you put the money in, I knew enough Italian to understand that if I put my change in, my euro in, it would turn on the lights on this painting. Yes, we've come to that, right? Yeah. You got to pay for your awe, folks. So I put a coin in the box, and I had no idea how amazed I would be when the light went on to this Giovanni Bellini painting from the 1500s that has sat in that church for hundreds of years. And first, I was just struck by the beauty of this painting, by the tone of red in this garment of one of the people in the I thought I could touch it. And I couldn't believe how old it was. And then the next thing that hit me was that week after week, the people in this Catholic parish come to this church and they hang out with this painting. It's just part of their regular, every Sunday, every day mass church. Bellini spends company and time with them every week. And then I wondered, do they still appreciate it? Or do they walk right past this painting, right up the center aisle? Don't even look at it anymore. Don't even notice. Don't even pause to go, wow. And the second thing that occurred to me of just awe recently in my life was right here last Sunday night. I don't know how many of you came to the Vespers. Can I get an amen for last Sunday's Vespers? There were these two young men, well, three young men, but two young men who were here who were 22 years old playing the bass and the drums. And I thought, people keep telling us that jazz is dying. And there are these 22-year-old young men who are playing it like it's life, like it's blood, like it's breath, like it's everything. And there was an older gentleman playing the trumpet like I ain't never heard a trumpet played before. And there were times during that hour when I just smiled. And it was the smile of awe. I just couldn't help myself. And I couldn't think of a better response to this feeling that was welling up inside of me that said, I'm so glad I'm here to bear witness to this, because this moment is special and precious. Ultimately, friends, awe is about savoring and appreciating being alive. There is, almost every time that I am awestruck, a tinge of melancholy for me. Maybe this is the fear that was described in the definition of awe. I enjoy and I appreciate, and then I feel somewhere within me the truth that someday I won't be able to experience this ever again. I'm one of those people that doesn't really fear death. I know I will die. I don't fear death. I simply don't want life to end. And this is where I most relate to the final stanzas of the poem by the late Mary Oliver, When Death Comes. She concludes the poem this way: when it's over, I want to say all my life I was a bride married to amazement. I was the bridegroom taking the world into my arms. When it's over, I don't want to wonder if I have made of my life something particular and real. I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened or full of argument. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world. Like the poet, I too want to be married to amazement. A person of awe who appreciates the moments of fleeting beauty, that sees and savors the gifts of life, even if they bring with them a sad recognition that they are not forever. Maybe this is part of why awe is so powerful. It is not forever. It can be seen and savored and noticed, but it cannot be forced. It won't be made to stay or linger. So friends, may we keep company with awe. May we be open to moments of re-enchantment. May we be grateful for the times when we see and sense life's beauty within, among, and around us. So may it be. And amen.